Life in the city has its share of strange and dangerous things. But at least in more populous areas, there is the expectation of the unusual, and a tolerance of the unorthodox. And acts of aggression or sedition are met with swift resolve in the strange find good company. But the city is not the province of the truly bizarre. The weirdest things brew where people have room to roam, under the cover of solitude, into the nooks and crannies that are tucked down too deeply into the landscape, into areas too secluded for the light of day to shine, or the influence of social norm to affect, or the long arm of the law to reach. This is a place where the expectation of consequence and the fear of retribution are unknown. This is where the schemers hide, the occultists practice, and the psychotic take refuge. This is where the overly curious do weird things, and the eccentric know no bounds. This is where the drifters wind up, where the addicts squat in abandoned land, or in silos, or even underground in hidden bunkers. This is where things that are oftentimes too bizarre or repulsive to believe can and do take place. Prepare your mind and join me in a journey into those hidden away places I like to call the Devil's Playground. Gelatophobia, Part 3. When I awoke, I didn't feel any particular pain and thought at first that I might have just had a bad dream. But as soon as I saw where I was at the bottom of the stairwell, and I felt a throbbing in my leg, a strong anxiety came over me that something horrible had happened, but I was still a bit too anesthetized to realize it fully. Then I tried to move. My swollen leg felt like a massive tumor. It felt like the mangled remnants of a useless appendage. I could feel a shooting pain, but there was a lot of numbness in the surrounding area. The surge of pain I felt was like nothing I'd ever felt before. Excruciating. I had to crawl to the couch. The pain was so blinding that I passed out as soon as I got there. I came to again, and I knew I had to do something about the leg, but I wasn't going to call for help. I was too ashamed after what had happened to my wife. I managed to make it to the bathroom to clean myself up. Then I looked in the mirror, in horror. I'd done a lot more damage to my face than I'd remembered. The bleeding had stopped, but my face was scabby, and there were going to be some pretty ugly scars. So I treated my wounds, and I wrapped up the leg as best I could with a used bandage I found in the medicine cabinet, and broke out an old pair of crutches I had used when I sprained my ankle in a tennis accident years back. And then I went about my business. What I didn't know was that my foot was so mangled that it would heal in such a way that it would give me a permanent limp. Avoiding the doctor was the absolute worst thing I could have done at that time, but I didn't care. I went to the funeral in crutches and sunglasses. My face was bandaged, and I wore a scarf around my neck and a hat on my head. I looked a bit like Claude Rains in The Invisible Man. No one recognized me. Either that or they felt more comfortable pretending like they didn't. I received condolences and got sympathy cards in the mail, mostly from her friends, because that's mainly who we hung out with. Thank you. but most of the people we had known together grew colder to me over time. Let me point out, if it isn't already obvious, that I wasn't a model husband. So I wasn't really surprised by their behavior toward me. And I think many of our joint friends, and particularly her friends, used this situation as an excuse to cut me out of their lives. At least no one accused me of having anything to do with her death. Fine, I say. Out of sight, out of mind. Who needs them? This twist of fate, which had also twisted my foot almost completely off my leg, was to seal my fate as a recluse. I didn't have to work. Between the insurance money I received from her death and the value of her estate, money was not a worry. But I felt very unsatisfied about things. She had turned me into this friendless lapdog, and now this dog's owner had abandoned him. At first, it didn't bother me. To your face, I would say that it still doesn't, but I'd be lying. You see, social isolation wasn't a fate I'd chosen. It chose me. I made the best of it, but it bested me. It tested me. But my foot got better, and I could use it to hobble around. But it was right about that time when the pandemic hit and the whole world came to a halt. And that's when my neighbors became quarantined too, alongside me. I don't know when I first started noticing the peculiar activity of my neighbors exactly, but I saw something I'd never seen before. Maybe it was because of some shift in my awareness due to the injury. Maybe I was just more self-reflective after Madeline's death, but it was there, a perception, a sixth sense that was becoming sharper all the time. I began to lose track of the days. If my computer had not reminded me what day of the week or what month out of the year it was, I wouldn't have known. I ordered everything online. I hoarded toilet paper, canned food, and other supplies. I never left the home. And when I went outside, it was usually at night. I didn't have the same interests anymore. I tried to convince myself that I didn't care about anything, but I cared about everything. And everything that I had really cared about had been ruined within the span of 1 week. Had my world been shattered by my wife's untimely death? Or had it been shattered by my own shattered foot? Or had this change in me happened because of people's reactions to me, which were easier to explain away when Madeline was still alive, but now blatantly targeted at me? Answers to my questions were not so simple. Then I started noticing them assembling outside in their yards. As I would tidy up in my house, covering the furniture with sheets or stomping out a cockroach nest, I saw them huddling in secret circles. They would talk for a while. It was such a creepy thing. One of them would turn and look toward me with a dead-eyed stare. And it was always a group of them conferencing in a circle, and it was always just one of them who turned to look at me. The first time I saw it, I ducked. Did they see me in here? Did they see me in the window? It looked exactly like they were discussing me, and then the guy turned. Then it hit me. I realized that they were probably conspiring about what to do with me. So I started watching them, too. Oh, yeah. I covered myself with a sheet, bunching it around my head with just enough room to let my eyes peer out, pulled up a chair, and started to watch them every day. This was going to be a spy versus spy. I wasn't going to be intimidated. Oh, no. They met in their secret circles every day, and I sat there in the window every day watching them. I started to get so curious about what they were talking about, in fact, that I felt an anger welling up inside of me, an indignation. I no longer wished to hide here in the house. I wanted to get closer to them, to show them I wasn't scared of them. But I had spent a long stretch of time isolated in my house. Weeks, months. And I wasn't presentable to the public. Not even to my neighbors. So I came up with a plan. First I showered, lots of soap, really lathered up, and then I shaved. Then I put on the most attractive shirt and jeans I could find. It had been a while since I had been outside, so I found my sunglasses. Then I put on makeup. Layer after layer, I caked it on to cover up the scars on my face. Did it look natural? No. I looked like a strange wild-eyed man wearing makeup. So I wrapped the scarf around the bottom of my face. I really prepared myself, and after an hour or so of convincing myself in the mirror that I looked acceptable enough to go outside, I grabbed my keys, took several deep breaths, and then turned the knob of the front door to face my conspirators. I left under the guise of going grocery shopping, but something went terribly wrong. As I walked toward my car at too fast a pace to seem natural, my limp became particularly noticeable. Oh, I know that it was. Then I noticed that there were three newspapers on my front lawn. Damn that kid. I told him to put them just inside my garage. I was planning to pull the mail into my car through the window as I drove past it, but I couldn't pick up the papers from the car, and I didn't want to just leave them in the yard, so I started limping toward them to pick them up. I was getting very close to the conspirators, standing in their yards, watching me. And then I heard it. I wasn't paying attention to the people. I was just looking at the papers I was planning to pick up. But I heard it. Laughter. So I stared in the direction of the mocking sound. Nobody was taking responsibility for it. They just looked the other way. So I picked up the papers one by one, and I took a deep breath, and I headed back to my car with as much dignity as I could muster. Just as I reached my car, laughter again. That mocking sound made every loose nerve in my body quiver with indignation.
Visit us directly online at thedevilsplaygroundshow.com. Subscribe to the Devil's Playground podcast to stay tuned at anchor.fm/thedevilsplayground. And visit our merchandise store at tinyurl.com/thedevilsplaygroundstore.
You've been listening to The Devil's Playground.